Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to have with me today on University Matters two guests, Professor Dennis De Luca and Dr. Stephen C. Spiteri. Just a brief word about, just an introduction to my guests. Professor De Luca gained his degrees in architecture here at the University of Malta, and he studied for his PhD at Liverpool University. He's a past dean of the then Faculty of Architecture and Civil Engineering, now called the Faculty of the Built Environment. He's currently, though, the director of the International Institute for Baroque Studies, which is mainly what we're going to be speaking about today. He's head of the Department of Architecture and Urban Design at the University of Malta here, and he's also author of several books, and I'm sure listeners will know him mainly for that, because he has some beautiful and fascinating books and on architecture, and he focuses on the architectural history of the Baroque Age. And with him is Dr. Stephen C. Spiteri, who has gained his BA honours and PhD here at the University of Malta. He's the author of a number of books and studies on the military history and fortifications of Malta, some beautiful tomes, really, one would have to call them. A great deal of research must have gone into that. Dr. Spiteri is currently research coordinator at the Restoration Directorate in the Ministry for Resources and Rural Affairs and a part-time lecturer at the International Institute for Baroque Studies here at the University of Malta. Welcome, gentlemen. I think possibly the first question I'd better ask Professor De Luca is really for a bit of a definition of Baroque. When you talk about the Baroque period, can we sort of put it in an historical context?
Yes, we can. It's very interesting, actually, that the word Baroque only started being used towards the end of the 18th century. And strangely enough, it is derived from the Portuguese word barroco, which really means kind of a unusually shaped pearl. No one knows actually the relationship between this pearl and baroque, but the thing is that soon afterwards, in the 19th century, art historians like Burckhardt and his student Wolfen starting referring to the art and architecture of the 17th century as Baroque. Wolfen in particular said that Baroque art and architecture is neither Renaissance nor neoclassical, but it is achievement which has to be judged in its own right. It was not a continuation of the Renaissance, he said. It was not an introduction to what happened afterwards, but it is something, a strange animal, shall we say.
Crept onto the scene.
Exactly.
Or burst onto the scene, perhaps.
But now Baroque is obviously the object of quite a lot of study and research which is going on all over Europe, and in particular one can see the large amount of literature and books and publications that are published about Baroque in Italy, where the Baroque movement was actually born.
But then now, it spreads, yes, spread beyond, yes, the
so
shore.
Actually today when we refer to Baroque, we refer to the way of life that happened, an eminently European way of life, which actually happened between the second half of the 16th century and the first half of the 18th century. practically spanning 200 years. And, of course, the next logical question is, why did it happen? Why did this very particular way of life come into place, really? And there were several reasons. I mean, the 16th century, when Baroque started, was a very particular century. There were the great discoveries of the New World, therefore new horizons were opened to mankind. There were the scientific investigations which started happening at this time, and therefore all of a sudden new horizons started being exposed. I mean, Copernicus, Kepler, the great astronomers, the great mathematicians. I mean, it all started in the 16th century. And of course, to top it all, the Lutheran Reformation, which actually split Europe literally into two camps, of a religious nature initially, but afterwards becoming really a political struggle between the House of the Bourbons and the House of Habsburg. So essentially, we have this very interesting scenario introducing the Baroque Age. Now, as a result of all this, obviously, we can really say that Baroque covered the whole spectrum of human activity. Perhaps the most important and the most dominating is the military side of Baroque. Fulvio Testi, the Italian statesman and diplomat, said that the 17th century was il secolo del soldato, the century of the soldier, because there were only 4 years of peace in the 17th century.
Incredible.
In all the other years, practically, there was some war of another. Of course, the dominant war was the 30 Years' War, and that is why the great advances that happened in the Baroque Age regarding fortifications and military architecture. But then, of course, there were the other sides of Baroque. We have the philosophers, Descartes, for example. We have the scientist, Isaac Newton. We have the great mathematicians, largely controlled by the great amount of Jesuit faculties of mathematics, which were opened all over Europe to counteract the scientific knowledge emerging from Tübingen in the Protestant camp. Therefore, essentially, we have other things, like, for example, the palace way of life. Baroque was an age where the aristocracy, la classe dirigente, actually dominated the entire political scenario of Europe. These people required very large places of living, palaces, gardens, etc. And of course, this entailed a whole spectrum of activity, covering music, gardening, banquets. Therefore, when we talk about the Baroque Age, really, we're talking about an infinite number of activities which were happening in Europe in the second half of the 16th, 17th and early 18th century.
Why is the Baroque important, or is the Baroque important to Malta?
Father Peter Sarracen Anglot once said that there were two golden ages in Malta. The age of prehistory, when our temples were built, and the age when the knights were here. Therefore, the Baroque, because the knights were here at the time, precisely corresponding to the Baroque in art, architecture, and so many other things. Now, the knights were a very particular society. They were warrior monks, but apart from being soldiers and being religious, they were also derived from practically the noble families that mattered from all over Europe. Therefore, the nobility of Europe, which was mainly responsible for promoting the Baroque way of life, was here represented in Malta in this international community, coming from the different European countries where the Baroque was used with very great force to communicate the political ideals of the ruling houses. Therefore, essentially, it is very logical that the knights were very interested in Baroque. They wanted to use Baroque as a means of propagating their influence, of establishing their status, of actually showing that Valletta was a very important city, not only from the military point of view and from the religious point of view. Someone once called it La Città di Dio, the city of God, because, of course, of the knights here living in Malta, but also to embellish their city in line with what was going on in terms of city planning and embellishment and architecture and arts all over Europe. And we have a case of the famous Caravaggio, who comes to Malta, is seeing the Grand Master breaking all rules to appoint him Knight of Malta, actually carrying out some very major works here in Malta, and thereby embellishing the new sacristy of the Church of St. John, the conventual church of the Knights. I mean, one cannot really think of a gesture on the part of the Knights which was so consciously aimed at introducing the Baroque way of life in Malta.
Perhaps I can bring in Dr. Spiteri here. We're obviously gathering from what Professor De Luca is saying that the military aspect was very important at various levels. Your expertise obviously is in fortifications, and here we're not lacking, are we, in fortifications?
I see it in the sense that the Knights, one of the Knights' major concerns was actually to militarize the society. You know, they were an institution which was directed towards a perpetual state of warfare against Turks. So they invested huge resources to establish what we call their war machine in many ways. And primarily their main instrument of war was the fleet, the Order's fleet. It was that instrument which they used to, you know, attack and defend Christian interests around. However, they had to have what I call an insurance policy, and that was their fortifications. I mean, these continual raids and attacks on Turkish shipping and Muslim barbarism invited retaliation, and we see the order's history is actually punctuated by a cyclical pattern of these allarme generale, when there was fear of attacks, some of which actually materialized into full-blown sieges, like the Great Siege. So they invested considerable resources in this fortification of the island. And however, what we see happening during this period, during the 16th, 17th, and 18th century, is that fortifications are not static. Right? They are developing continually. The technology of warfare, informed by the advances in science and in mathematics, is still taking shape. Although it is basically still the Italian system of fortification, which is introduced in the early 1500s, what we call the bastion trades, but however, in its scope and scale, it changes considerably. And what we see happening largely in the 17th century, in the 1600s, is this introduction of the two important elements which can be attributed to Baroque military architecture. One is the introduction of the sense of monumentality. And fortifications are no longer simply to be to fulfill a functional role. They have to be seen doing it. And so they grow enormously in scale, you know, like the Cotonera Ancient, vast schemes of fortifications which practically bankrupted the order at the end of the day. However, they had to impose also a visual presence, you know, this concern with their aesthetic qualities. In fact, we consider that the fortress in the Baroque period reaches its apogee, you know, its peak, and because it brings together three most important elements. One is engineering on a scientific basis, architecture, spatial composition, and art. Right? So this importance to make the fortress impose itself on the landscape. And I think the best example we have of that is simply by looking at Fort Manuel from the Valletta side. When you see this mezzanchain of the, you know, the chapel, the barrack blocks. And there's another very important element which the Baroque period, largely to the influences, rightly pointed out by Professor De Luca before me, of the French and Northern engineers, is this emphasis on order. The fortress in the 17th and 18th century becomes an ordered place. It's no longer a chaotic, you know, fortress inspired by personal, you know, talents of the engineer itself. It's actually the product of a controlled system, a controlled military organization.
And the people that were brought in to do this, are we talking about people who were actually doing this sort of thing elsewhere in Europe?
Yes,
were we really up to date? Because we tend to think of Malta sometimes as a bit of a backwater as far as Morda and the latest thing is concerned.
Not as far as fortifications were concerned. In fact, the Knights were very much concerned to keep their works of defense updated to the latest technologies. And what in reality what we see happening is this, because of, also of the fact that the knights had direct access to the courts of Europe through their nobility and connections, practically that meant that they had access to the latest technology. And in fact, many of the knights, the engineers who were employed or brought over by the knights, had been serving and building the, you know, the latest forms of fortifications in European countries. So the mechanism which the Order of St. John adopted allowed this the knights to keep ahead. And however, one has to remember that the knights themselves were military men, so that they were not simply passive, you know, consumers of technology. They actually lent a hand, you know, in developing the architecture itself. And many of the knights themselves were very well trained in military architecture. They had military experience, you know, either attacking a place. Some of them were actually high officials in the armies, warring armies of Europe, so they had considerable military experience of sieges, of defending works of fortification. And they brought all this together to Malta. And Malta, in a way, was a laboratory of fortifications. And some of the works which were built here, although many can actually echo, but there were many important inventions also. For example, the fugas, the stone-throwing mortar. That is, I think, one of the most ingenious devices ever. In fact, there's a very interesting remark by Patrick Bryden, I think, the traveler to Malta, where he says the Maltese not only used the rock to build fortifications, but they actually turned it into a weapon, which is the fugas. Also, another very important development, as in fortification terms, that is Fortinier, which is built in the late last decade of the order's rule. But again, that shows this concern with importing, and they were very much aware of the latest technologies and how to develop them. I will have in the lectures, for example, one of the themes is on the influence of Montalembert, who was actually not part of the established French corps of engineers. He was more of a revolutionary. He was not very much liked in France at the time. However, he introduced new ideas based on German concepts. And we see, for example, Fortinier is based on a design built late in France in 1791, what are known as the Lunettes d'Arçon. Toussaint, who was a French engineer, however, develops the concepts further. In fact, the British military were very much impressed by and started to copy the design. So there is a lot of
cross-fertilization,
yes, given to technology, if you want to call it that.
Dr. Potelius mentioned the lectures. Perhaps you can tell us something about them. Looking down the list, what fascinated me was, in fact, the variety and the obvious attempt to deconstruct a bit the Baroque into its various elements. How is this reflected in this series of lectures coming up, or courses that are coming up?
Well, first of all, this is the first series of courses. These 11 courses which are going to be held this year, they are evening courses. They start at 6 and finish at 8 in the evening. And essentially, they are only the first of a series of courses which the Institute of Baroque Studies plans to hold in coming years. Now, these courses actually focus on architecture, military and civil, and its conservation, which is something of great importance at the moment, not only in Malta, practically all over Europe. Now, these courses, there are 11 courses actually, can be classified into four groups. In the first group, we have the courses which deal with the art of war. And the art of war means cannons, fortifications, military engineering practice, naval military matters. Therefore, all these courses, actually equipment, armor, all these courses deal with the art of war as it was practiced and interpreted in the Baroque Age. Now, the second group of courses deal with architecture. where we are really going to have a look at Baroque civil architecture, churches, palaces, gardens, etc., from the point of view of they being symbols of power, and from the point of view that they being projects which were meant to delight the human eye. Therefore, the issue of politics and embellishment is going to be the main theme of this course. Then we have another course which deals with warfare scenarios of the Baroque Age, but as seen in works of art. In the Baroque Age, one class of artistic works was very much concerned with the concept of triumphalism, and so does the music, incidentally. When you hear the music of the famous Baroque French composer, Lully, for example, one can see the air of triumph that was present in France during the age of Louis XIV. There was Soleil. Therefore, in these lectures we're going to look at painting, sculpture, monuments, the spirit of triumph that happened in the Baroque Age, with a focus, of course, of what was happening in Malta. Actually, what we mean to do in these courses is to really relate events in Malta and the Baroque Age to the international scenario. And therefore, essentially, it is always starting from the international scenario and focusing on, with a zoom lens, into what was happening in Malta. And then we have the other category of courses, which deal with the conservation of Baroque buildings and monuments, the different aspects involved in conservation. And most of these courses, actually, are going to be based on hands-on experiences, so that people can actually touch and feel the materials that are used in conserving our Baroque heritage. And finally, there is one course in particular, which is based on new knowledge concerning the Jesuits as the most influential order of the Baroque Age. The Jesuits, opening all these mathematical schools all over Europe, teaching and researching on geometry, but most interesting, applying this knowledge of geometry to writing, carrying out consultancies, teaching about fortification building, all in a good cause, because this was really the survival of Catholic Europe against the Protestant Reformation on one side, heretics, as the Jesuits called them, and the infidel menace, the Turks. In the eyes of the Jesuits, as the new soldiers of Christ, they were very, very concerned at providing the mathematical knowledge, which was important, and diffusing, disseminating knowledge about fortification building, so that the princes of Europe would be in a really good position to hit back against the enemies of the Catholic Church.
You mentioned the courses about, for example, about the Jesuits as new knowledge. This is research. This has been done recently. This is going to be part of your Institute's raison d'etre, really, that you're going to be, I imagine, developing an interaction between your research, which is going to be very, very deep and very wide, and then putting forward your findings to perhaps sometimes an academic group of people, but also to the general public. And these courses are aimed at an interested audience, not at an specifically academic audience.
Well, the Institute has been set up since 1996. Practically, more than 10 years have passed. If one looks at the website of the Institute, which has recently been upgraded, the website is www.um.edu.mt/IIBS for International Institute for Baroque Studies. Now, if one looks at the website of the Institute and one sees the research and the publications and the books that have been published in the past 10 years, one can really get an idea of the great amount of new knowledge that has been formulated over these past 10 years. And essentially, I very much believe in this rapport between teaching and research, because actually the whole raison d'etre of an institute of this type, I think in any university, is that really the research done should be channeled not only to academic publications and to academic audiences, which has been done all the time, actually, but it must also be channeled to the general public to show actually what the academic world is contributing to knowledge in general. That is what a university is all about, I would think. I think a university is not about just teaching aspiring professionals, but I always think that a university should really much be concerned with the dissemination of not only existing knowledge, but particularly new knowledge. That is why the development of academia is concerned about. And this is the role of the Institute, this was the role of the Institute of Baroque Studies from its very beginning, and this is what we're continuing to do in these public evening courses that we're initiating this year. There are going to be others in the coming years covering diverse fields.
Well, this is certainly a subject which I think would be dear to the heart of most Maltese, because the Baroque is so much sort of around us. We're very much aware of the Baroque. And I know that you've already had people showing a great interest in these courses, so I do suggest that people look on the website. And I think they can actually find out more from maria.bugeia@muhc.com.mt. Thank you both, Professor Dennis De Luca and Dr. Stephen Spiteri, for coming on University Matters to talk to us about the Baroque today. Thank you for listening to today's programme. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.